Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We're going to have just such a briefing for a full hour today with a man whose intelligence I've come to admire greatly, his acumen, particularly with respect to the business of the counter jihad, is, well, practically unparalleled in America today. He is Patrick Poole. You can find his writings regularly at PJ Media, where he does extraordinary work as really an investigative reporter on terrorism and national security issues. But he's deeply knowledgeable in these subjects. His counsel has been sought by those in government at Capitol Hill and elsewhere. And, of course, we're always thrilled to have his participation in our program. Patrick, welcome, and thank you for giving us generously of your time today.
Thanks for having me.
I'd like to start with kind of a parable, almost. Yesterday, the President of the United States made his first visit to a mosque in this country. And he chose, of all of the mosques that he could have gone to, the Islamic Society of Baltimore. I'd like to kind of tease out with you, Patrick Poole, as a man who knows a lot about both the mosques in this country and the relationships that many of them have with organizations like the Muslim Brotherhood, to figure out whether this was a bad choice by the president, perhaps emblematic of kind of a series of bad choices he's been making in this space. What do you think?
Well, Frank, I do think that this is kind of emblematic of the failure of the Obama administration's countering violent extremism, or CVE, policies, which, in fairness, also go back to the latter half of the Bush administration, where we see this engagement with really bad, I mean, known bad actors in the Muslim community, promoting them as moderates that are supposedly going to help us de-radicalize. Well, yet, in fact, we're seeing, from an empirical point of view, we're seeing more terror arrests now than we've ever seen before.
And not much thanks to these guys, as best I can tell, the partners in this outreach process.
I think there are a couple things with this Baltimore mosque visit by Obama. First off, is that Obama has to go to Baltimore to find a location that's not going to be problematic. He couldn't go directly across the Potomac River to Dar al Hijra, one of the largest mosques on the East Coast, because it's tired. Terror-tied up to its eyeballs. I mean, there have been more than a dozen, as I've reported at PJ Media previously, on Dar al-Hijra. You've just got this stream of terrorists, including their former imam, Anwar al-Awlaki, who was killed in a CIA drone strike as the senior al-Qaeda leader. And then they couldn't go to the Adams Center in Herndon, Virginia, because with Mohammed Majid, Obama's pal Mohammed Majid, where a number of U.S. officials have traipsed up to and held press events, because his mosque has churned out several terrorists here over the past couple years. Same thing with the mosque in College Park. So, I mean, that Obama has to go 70 miles away from the White House to find a mosque that could even be spun up as non-problematic is a problem in and of itself. And then you have the Baltimore Mosque.
Before we get to the Baltimore Mosque in more detail, but Patrick, as you've just pointed out, several of the mosques that have been prominent in the Washington region for some time are – In fact, entities with which the administration has engaged in the previous administration, as you say. But interestingly enough, the longtime imam of the mosque in Baltimore, a gentleman by the name of Muhammad Adam El-Sheikh, apparently spent time at the very mosque you're talking about, Dar al-Hijra, as well. In other words, problematic there, too. But talk, if you would, a little bit about the Islamic societies in this country, Patrick, and what we know about their relationship to the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, Frank, as Steve Coughlin points out in his book published by the Center for Security Policy, the Islamic Society is basically a brand name for the Muslim Brotherhood operating here in the United States. And we even see this in the Muslim Brotherhood documents, which the Justice Department entered into evidence during the Holy Land Foundation trial. So, you know, when we see Islamic Society, it immediately should, you know, pop up that, hey, you know, this is a Muslim Brotherhood related mosque. And in fact, we have the longtime imam who you were just talking about, Adam El-Sheikh. The Washington Post actually identified back in 2004, Muhammad El-Sheikh is a former member of the Muslim Brotherhood in Sudan. And not only that, while he was the imam at the mosque there in Baltimore, he was also the regional director for the Islamic American Relief Agency, which was designated a terrorist organization back in 2004 for funding Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda.
Yeah. So, Patrick, what I guess is coming across to those listening to this account is that the Obama administration may not have reached out in this instance to some of the people that it has in the past reached out to, some of the mosques, some of the Muslim Brotherhood front organizations, but they've chosen another one that just happens to be a little further removed. And I guess what I'm interested in mostly is, what does that tell us about the larger policy? You've indicated that we've been taking instruction from some of these very problematic people about how to avoid radicalization. Does this essentially mean, as a guy who's a serious professional in this space, that we've been suborned, not just penetrated, but actually suborned by enemy operatives?
Well, Frank, I think we'd be hard pressed to find another scenario in which the bad guys are more embedded inside our system than what we have today. And again, I'm a bipartisan critic in this regard. We had Republicans who were pushing the Muslim Brotherhood back in 2007, 2008, including the Bush administration. Officials within the Bush administration, the CIA, the State Department. And we see the reporting that's now coming out of the Middle East, where the Brotherhood is now openly, I mean, kind of dropped the pretense of their supposed nonviolence, and are in places like Libya are openly affiliating with Al Qaeda and with the Islamic State, and so. That our policies here inside the United States have been gravitating towards our countering violent extremism policies, have basically embraced these groups that overseas are now openly engaged with the bad guys. I mean, it's which, of course, a number of us have been, you know, warning about for more than a decade that this was a problem. But now we're seeing it work out. And we're seeing the problem proliferating at an exponential rate here inside the United States in terms of radicalization and jihadization.
Right. Patrick, we have to pause for a minute here. I just want to say what you've just described is really the nub of the issue, it seems to me. This imputing to the Muslim Brotherhood a commitment to nonviolence, which makes them acceptable partners, not only acceptable partners, but people that we want to empower and embrace and legitimate and, frankly, even arm because they somehow are on the right side in this difficult problem with the violent jihadists. When we come back, we're going to drill down on that question. What is the Muslim Brotherhood actually up to, and have they eaten our lunch? That and more with Patrick Poole of PJ Media right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.